When the music fades, all is stripped away, and I simply come, longing just to bring something that's of worth, that will bless your heart.
Hi, this is Chaplains Timothy Burdick
and Stephanie Burdick,
and we'd like to welcome you to the Visions of Love podcast, reaching out to the spiritually and physically blind throughout the world.
Welcome to our podcast. On today's show, we're featuring David Gumlawson from Feed My Starving Children. We hope you'll enjoy part one of his interview, as well as today's special music. Thank you for listening.
And it's all about you. It's all about you, Jesus. I'm sorry, Lord, for the thing I've made. When it's all about you, it's all about you, Jesus.
Thank you.
To contact us, all you need to do is go to mynvm.com.
NVM is an acronym for New Vision Ministries.
If you want to contact us, there's a contact form on the website. Or if you don't know Christ or need prayer, please call 507-369-6861. Thank you.
And now for part one of our interview with Dave Gumlickson.
Everybody, I want to introduce Dave from Feed My Starving Children. I just ask you, Dave, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and the beginnings of Feed My Starving Children, maybe the way things started out.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me today. My name is Dave Gumlickson, and I've been working here at Feed My Starving Children just shy of 10 years. I came from a church I was serving as a pastor prior to being, and it's just a little over 30 years old. It's an organization that came from a gentleman here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, who traveled for work about over 30 years ago to Honduras for a mission trip, or for a work trip, excuse me. And he found when he was there, he ran into some kids who were really in tough shape and really starving and not doing well. And he came home and began sending food to Honduras, whatever he could get his hands on, and realized that food was just making the kids sick because their bodies couldn't handle what he was sending. And so he ended up working with some food scientists here in the Twin Cities that created a formula with vitamins, veggies, soy, and rice in it that allows children who are malnourished or not doing well food-wise for their bodies to be restored within a few weeks of eating this food and help them get back on their feet. And so that's basically the same formula we've been using for the last over 30 years. Over 2 billion meals have been sent around the world.
Yeah, I read one story about a person who was literally almost dying. The child couldn't get up and walk or anything, and they had eaten that food, and they were restored to health. Do you have any stories like that you can tell the listeners?
Yeah, I mean, we have a number of stories where children around the world are found in tough situations. We have a young boy named Moses who's, when he was born, was actually placed in an outhouse because his mother couldn't take care of him. She didn't have food or anything for him, and so she hoped somebody would find him, and they found him and brought him in and restored him by feeding him Feed My Starving Children food. And we have that story. We could tell you from all across the world, the Philippines and Uganda and Guatemala and Honduras, Nicaragua, the same story where kids are found in situations where they don't have enough to eat. And this is something that has been able to bless them and give them health again.
What I was really interested in, first of all, since we've asked the background, is their volunteer participation.
Yeah, for sure. really everything we've ever packed over the last 30 years has been put together by volunteers. And so we have 8 permanent facilities, 3 in Minnesota, 3 in Chicago, 1 in Dallas, and 1 in Arizona, where folks can come into our place to pack. And then we do about 300 plus mobile pack events a year where people can come set it up in their communities or their churches or their businesses. And we do those in roughly 30 states every year where people can come up and volunteer for a 2-hour shift. They put on a hairnet and some gloves and now a face mask, and they go to work. And they really are amazing because they not only pack all the food, but all of our food is paid for by volunteers as well.
Now, one thing that I was interested in on your website, it said you don't use any machines to pack the food, but it's all volunteers. And they talked just vaguely about, you know, the difference between the personal touch and so forth with other people packing it rather than machines. Could you kind of address yourself to that, to the difference?
Yeah, certainly. You know, that was the case for the last 30 years. We've used volunteers. What I love about it is that it's good for all ages. So 5 years old to 105, you can pack with grandma and grandchildren, you can pack together. They're scooping the ingredients, they're sealing the bag, they're putting the bags in the boxes. And I often tell volunteers, you're the last one that will touch it. And the next time these boxes and bags are open will be for a family or a child or a school somewhere around the world. Now, this last year with COVID, we had to punt a bit. We had 9 days where we had to shut down. Because we couldn't have volunteers gathering, and we actually partnered with 3 organizations, sometimes 4, to do some machine packing. And it really was a saving grace this year. People were able to still give us donations. We used that money then to do machine pack meals this year. But our real machines and the real heart of FMSC is our volunteers.
Wow. Well, one thing I would like to mention, and maybe you can expand on this, Dave, is neither my wife and I can see, and we had the privilege of going to feed my starving children and help scooping out the food while our friends put it in the bags and so forth and in the boxes. And I just wanted to mention that because a lot of times, maybe if you can't see or something like that, you don't think that you can do those things. Well, that's not true, and a lot of people really are dependent on your help. So whatever your situation, you know, get out there. There's something for you to do.
Yeah, it's one of the things we really try to emphasize is we have all kinds of groups coming to visit us from different levels of abilities, some with higher need levels and assistant levels that come in and work with us all week long at our sites. And so we have, you know, people can label bags, people can scoop ingredients. There's plenty of staff to help. And there really is a variety of jobs and skill levels and, you know, capacity levels that enables just about anybody and everybody to come pack with us. We have over 1 million volunteers that came last year. We'd love for two years ago. I forget the COVID year in there, of course. But we really try to make it safe, a safe place for everybody to come in and be able to have something to do to help. We need everybody we can get.
Now, one thing that I thought maybe we should talk about, because people don't really know too much about it in the West, is the fact that the lack of nutrition leads to so many other diseases. I was wondering if you could address yourself to that.
Certainly. I mean, we have I've seen, you name it, crickets and tuberculosis and all kinds of other difficulties with learning and development. We have found that kids, I mean, without food can really do little to nothing. And so we have heard such incredible reports from teachers over the years that have said, you can't believe what a difference it makes for these students. A lot of our food is distributed through school lunch programs, but all kinds of things from swollen stomachs to skin diseases to eye problems. This food and good nutrition for kids can really be the turning point for them. And so we often say that food is the foundation. And we know that their little bodies and their minds can do so much more when they have enough nutrition to use each day.
What would you say if I just played devil's advocate and say, well, that's great, Dave, but there's a lot of people in the United States that are starving?
It's an interesting question we get a lot, actually. You know, we are dealing with kids that literally have no options. And I would say here in the United States, one of the things that's probably differentiates from the programs we do overseas is that there are options for food here more often than not.
That's true.
If you're looking for food here in the States, there's lots of places that often provide it. Whereas these kids, some of these folks in rural Haiti and rural other places across the globe, literally have nothing to even choose from. No shelters, no soup lines or soup kitchens or food shelters or food pantries. And so it really is a difference in that way, is that starvation is not so much the issue here in the United States as it is just lack of access.
And I was interested in finding out more about the partnerships that you have all across the globe with people and how the mechanics of that, how they work.
We often call our partners the true heroes of the story. These are the folks that live and work on the ground across the globe. To receive food from Feed My Starving Children, they go through a significant vetting process. And what we do is we donate a container of food to them, which is about $65,000. We have a container we'll give to them. And we ask them then to pay for the shipping to bring it into the country, which can vary in price depending on which country they're in. And so they have a significant players in the game. And one of my favorite numbers at FMSC is over 30 years, we've had over 99.7% of the food we've shipped make it to where it's supposed to go. And we really believe that's because these partners we have on the ground are so incredible and know their countries and know the cultures and know the custom situations that they're able to get the food in and get it to the kids that need it the most. So we rely heavily on them. We spend a lot of time with them, and we encourage them, and they really are the ones that get the food to the kids that need it most.
Uh-huh. What are some of the challenges that you face as far as getting the food out?
Our biggest challenge, we are always asked for more than we can pack, and so financially, having enough money to pay for all of the food, although our donations over this COVID season have been incredible. People have been so generous. Certainly, customs is always a challenge to get things in and out of customs quickly and moving. We often have holdups in customs. And certainly, we're sending food into some of the most challenging places of the world, you know, into Yemen over the last several years, into Syria, into war-torn situations, into how they corrupt situations at times. And so just some of the things that anyone would be challenged to get food through, we run into some of those same things.
What I thought was interesting, too, as a Christian organization, Feed My Starving Children is sensitive to different faiths like Islam and so forth with the way what they have as far as food. Could you talk as far as that?
We just see them as starving children, and we certainly aren't going to let anything stand in the way of trying to feed as many kids as we can. You know, one of my favorite experiences at Feed My Starving Children was several years ago. We were approached by the Somali community here in the Twin Cities. And if you're familiar with St. Paul, Minneapolis, the second largest population of Somali folks outside of Somalia live here in the Twin Cities. And there was a significant crisis, a food crisis and a famine in Somalia. And they said, can you help us? Can you help us get food? And so we put together a significant event, over 15,000 volunteers. We tried to pack close to 5 million meals over a 4-day period. We called the event Love Somalia. And we sent the food onto Somalia. And we spent a lot of time meeting with the leaders of the mosques here in the Twin Cities and trying to partner alongside of them so that folks from the mosques were coming out to pack as well as other folks across the Twin Cities. And it really was an incredible event about feeding kids and doing it together.
One thing that caught my attention when I was going over the website was basically you don't just feed people, but you educate and you help people as far as becoming more self-sufficient. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, we do a lot of, you know, a lot of folks say to us, well, what are you just feeding them? Isn't that making it more difficult for them? And obviously we see it as the food is the foundation, that we can't do much to sustain somebody if they don't have enough to eat. But one of the things we're seeing happen now, we're packing food now that we're sending with only 3 ingredients, for example. And so we're sending food internationally now that has the soy product, the vitamins, and the veggies. And we're asking local vendors and local farmers to provide the rice to add to the meals as a way of supporting the economies. We have a marketplace where we work with artisans and vendors and artists around the world who create things that we sell in our marketplace here at Feed My Starving Children. And so we have, you know, clay mugs and jewelry from Haiti and beaded animals, jewelry from all across Africa, things from the Philippines that we sell in our marketplace as a way to support these vendors. And we also have what we're doing, intentional communities that we're feeding every day for over a period of 3 years to help them get back on their feet and create sustainable, more sustainable type programs. And so it is something that's on the forefront of our mind all the time, is doing what we can to help these communities grow and become as sustainable as possible.
That concludes part one of this interview. We hope that you're enjoying it, and please stay tuned for part two of this interview in 2 weeks. Thank you.
Hope you've enjoyed this, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. God bless.
Thank you, and God bless you.